To start with, for people that don't know you at all, can you give me...
Oh, sorry, we've got the dog.
That's right. Okay. We've had a lot of dogs in these interviews. Just for the sake of podcast introductions, what's your dog's name?
Oh, he's called Brock, and he's a trainee search and rescue dog because my husband is on the mountain rescue team. But he likes playing. I might just go and put him inside.
Hello and welcome to the Extraordinary Ordinary You podcast. My name's Frankie, and this is the podcast from a 3,000 kilometre cycle journey around the UK, where I spoke to women and non-binary folk older than myself about their adventurous lives. This is season 3, where I pedal through the lakes, up to Glasgow, and across to Edinburgh. Welcome to episode 5, where I chat to Jen Grange at her house not far outside of Keswick. I chat to Jen in her garden in an absolutely stunning valley as the sun sets behind us. It is absolutely gorgeous. I love this conversation. We chat about Reiki, about mindfulness, about Jen's experiences, both working and just out enjoying the outdoors by herself and as a family. You can sometimes hear a chainsaw, an engine starting, and a tractor in the background, as well as a few birds. I've tried to cancel out the noise as much as I can, but I hope it doesn't deter from Jen's incredible stories.
For that one again. Bless him. Sorry.
Oh, amazing. So for people that don't know you at all, could you please give me a snapshot of who you are and what you do?
Oh, okay, sure. So I'm Jen Grange. I live in Newlands Valley, just outside Keswick in the Lake District. As I said, I'm 41. I've got a husband and two children who are 7 and 5. I've spent most of my career working in the outdoors, in fact, pretty much all of it. At the moment, I work for Natural England, the government's advisor for the environment, on a programme called Connecting People with Nature. And I also, in my spare time at weekends, I run a business called Lakeland Wellbeing, which is about trying to connect people with nature and improving people's wellbeing to really give people an opportunity to be well in themselves so they can be able to be more open to supporting the environment.
Amazing. That's so cool, because usually I ask people sort of like to maybe start with what they do in the outdoors, and then I talk about them professionally, and then I talk more about their outdoors. But for you, it's just
kind of merges
all in one. Can we go sort of like right back to the start? Like, have you always been like an outdoorsy person?
Yeah, I think my kind of earliest memories are of my mum teaching me flower names when we walked the dogs. And so I actually grew up in the south. I grew up in Kent, and then I moved up here when I was a teenager. To go to university, actually, in Ambleside. So I've always been into nature, and my first, I suppose, I moved up to Ambleside to do a degree in outdoor studies, which was a combination of environmental science, outdoor sports science, expedition management, that kind of thing. So I did that for 3 years in Ambleside, and then I worked in the outdoor industry teaching climbing, gill scrambling, that kind of thing for a year or so. And then I went to manage a marina on Derwentwater, actually, an RYA training centre. And so I did that for 3 years. And then I thought, oh, do you know what? I'm not really feeling that satisfied. I feel like I need to be more connected with nature rather than just the sports side of it. So I went back to university to do a master's degree at Newcastle in agriculture and environmental science, because I was really interested in the cusp between agriculture and the environment. And there's often a little bit of conflict or friction around that. So I was really interested to kind of explore that space. And then I got a job for Natural England just after that. I started off in Yorkshire, and at the same time was in the army, actually. I was an army reservist. I was in the intelligence corps for 7 years, which coincided with that, which interestingly I ended up working on the training areas over in Catterick for work, and also training on them at the weekends. So that was quite useful, having that crossover. And then I met my husband Rob and moved back over to the lakes, and I was able to pick up my Natural England job over here. So I've been doing that. So I worked in land management and conservation for quite a long time, looking after sites of special scientific interest and supporting farmers with agri-environment schemes to manage the land in an environmentally sensitive way. So I used to work in the Western Lake District, which is just it's just beautiful over there and lovely, and the Central Fells. And then I used to cover the River Derwent and Bassenthwaite and the River Ian over in Ennerdale as well. So that was pretty special. And then a couple of years ago, I just felt, so I've always done Reiki. Reiki's been in my life since I was little because my mum's done Reiki. I decided, I've been doing all sorts of other things, and including I've done a coaching qualification and things like that. And I decided that whilst doing things for the environment is really important, it kind of made me realise that people aren't that engaged with it, perhaps. And I really felt that, well, I've got this kind of ethos behind the Lakeland Wellbeing thing, is that when we're in a space where we're not well, or we're anxious or frustrated or not in balance with our lives, we are able to think beyond what's going on. So we're not able to think, oh, I'll just put the recycling out. Oh, I'll just support this conservation charity. Or, you know, I'll make some bug houses or something like that. And so my theory behind, my passion behind putting together Lakeland Wellbeing is that to try and make more people well, and therefore helping the environment with that, and hopefully encouraging people to have more pro-conservation behaviours. A few years ago that I read about forest bathing, and I was like, oh, well, I already do this. So I actually went on a course down in Devon to get my forest bathing guide qualification. And then I now have a relationship with Forestry England up at Winlatter Forest, which is just over there. So I run forest bathing sessions up there, which are really just starting to take off, which is great.
Amazing. I want to talk to you about Lakeland Wellbeing, and I want to talk to you about Reiki as well.
Okay.
But before we do, can we go back to your sort of work side of it?
Mm.
What, you say that you work in conservation and agriculture and lots of different areas doing different things, but what does that look like? What would you do on a day-to-day?
So I've actually just started a new job within Natural England now, actually, which is different. But so what it did look like was, when I was an advisor on the ground, it would be, well, we do condition assessments on the sites of special scientific interest. I might do a walk around a farm with a farmer to see how his agri-environment agreement was doing and what he wanted to do in his next scheme, and just do a check on some of the habitats and how that was going. When people want to do development or things like that, it comes through to, if there's a protected site nearby, that comes through to you to approve or not. So to give consent or not to give consent. So quite a lot of my time was taken up with doing that. But just basically protecting the environment.
Amazing. Awesome. And I don't know a lot about Reiki at all.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me a little bit more about what it is?
So Reiki is a practice that's been around for a number of years, since the beginning of the century, really. And it's an energy technique. So it helps to relax the body and calm the mind. So the Reiki practitioner is, the energy doesn't come from the Reiki practitioner. It's kind of channeled through you. And Reiki means universal life force energy. So it's effectively drawing all the energy from around us through the Reiki practitioner as a channel. And then it effectively comes out of your hands to help the person that you're with. And it can be either hands-on or hands-off. You can even send distance healing.
Amazing. And you say that's something that's been sort of a part of your whole life.
Yeah. So from a really early age, my mum did it. So, you know, those kind of moments of teenage angst when the whole world's going to end, and it would be like, oh, have some Reiki. And it's very soothing. It's really great for self-healing. I use it every day, and I now teach it as well, which is great. I got my teaching qualification last year. So
amazing.
Although I haven't done anything since lockdown, of course.
And if someone wanted to get involved and give it a try, how?
So there are hundreds of Reiki practitioners around the country, and you can just kind of Google Reiki practitioners near me and some pop up. Like I said, there are many, many people. If you want to just have a go, if you want to learn it, there are quite a few Reiki master teachers around as well. I'm one of them, there's several in Cumbria. And actually tonight I run a Reiki circle. Well, I help to run a Reiki circle. We do it in combination with several of us. And so Keswick Reiki Circle has about, oh, I don't know, 20 members. We dial in on Zoom now rather than meeting face to face, but it's something we do to send distance healing, to practice, to have a bit of a check-in with each other.
Amazing, that sounds awesome. And so tell me about Lakeland Wellbeing. How can you go a little bit more into detail about the journey of how you started it?
Yeah, sure. I'm trying to think how it all kind of panned out, really. The other thing I do is I'm a mindfulness teacher, and I think that starting the mindfulness, which I did when my daughter was born and got very overwhelmed. So I already had a son, and having a 2-year-old and a baby was quite tricky. And I found that by introducing mindfulness into a daily practice really, really helped me. that sort of put me in a different space, and I was able to have a bit more, I suppose I was able to think a bit more about where I wanted to go with my life and what things were important to me. And the well-being side of things really was. So I was already practicing Reiki, and I then started to do more mindfulness. I now teach mindfulness, and the forest bathing came along. And I also do another couple of techniques called emotional freedom technique and kinetic shift, which is a hypnotherapy technique to kind of move people from one state to another. So I don't know, if you've got a phobia or something like that, it will help you to shift into a different place where that phobia is not important anymore. So yeah, that's kind of got me into the healing space. And then I realised that unless people have got that room in their lives to be well and to think wider, sort of as if, just like I had really, that they wouldn't necessarily have the space to be thinking about nature or thinking about conservation or thinking wider than their own immediate circumstances. So that's where I really wanted to kind of share the skills that I got and what I could offer to help people feel well and to allow them to be in the best place that they could be. So then they can go, oh, I'm feeling great now. Oh, look, there's this opportunity over here. And I think forest bathing, I absolutely love forest bathing. And it's such an honour, actually, to take a group of people into the forest. And as the guide, I am just the guide. So the forest does all the healing. I just kind of open the door for people. And to see the changes that you get from people standing in the car park to when they finish is really, really quite special. And so we do a well-being score at the beginning. We get people to check in and say, you know, how's your well-being now? And the other day, somebody went from a 2 to a 10. They were so energised and positive when they left. It was really great.
And for people that maybe don't know what forest bathing is, can you tell us more about it?
Sure, yeah. So forest bathing is a practice that originates in Japan. And in the 1980s, people who were working in the cities, perhaps high-rise buildings, weren't getting much exposure to nature and found that we're getting really quite sick and stressed. And so what they found is that by taking people outside for a couple of hours in nature to do some mindfulness and engage with senses really helped to improve people's well-being. In Japan, they call it Shinrin Yoku, which literally translates as forest bath. So lots of people are a bit confused about it and think you're going to start stripping your clothes off in the forest, but that's not the case at all. It's basically basking in the forest environment. So the sessions that I run last 3 hours, we start off with some mindful walking to really slow down the body, slow down the mind. I give the group invitations. So these are invitations to open up the senses in terms of sight and sound and smell and taste and touch. So we walk along and we might focus on the light and shadow of the forest, or the light kind of dancing through the leaves, or we might go along, as one particular bit I love, where we focus in on texture and patterns. And so we go along and it's amazing how people get down on their hands and knees and are so curious and touch things. And it really is a wonderful way of being very mindful in the forest. We also do a really lovely meditation around sound. So we sit, we've got this beautiful little secret glade up at Winnata Forest where nobody else goes. And we sit and we kind of just open up our ears to receive the sounds of the forest, and that's beautiful. And then at the end, we get to spend time with a tree, which is really special. So as people go around, they can kind of go, oh, quite fancy. I feel drawn to this tree, for example. And then they get to go and spend some time with it in a mindful way, which is really lovely. And at the end, we have a tea ceremony. So we're sharing circle and a tea ceremony. So it's quite although we're quiet, it can be quite a sociable thing at the end. And it's really lovely to hear everybody's different experiences. And by hearing those experiences, you benefit even more.
It sounds like a lot to pack into 3 hours, actually.
No. Yeah, it's not that, I don't know, 3 hours. Yeah, we quite often run over.
How often do you run the sessions?
So I've been running them nearly once a fortnight since we started being able to come out and about again. But over the winter, I run them once a month. So I run one in half term, for example. And then, I run a winter solstice one, which is lovely, where we sit, it's a bit later on, and we sit, watch the sunset, and we sit around a fire. And then we do a bit of a cleansing ritual, where we think of all the things that we don't need anymore that we perhaps want to get rid of. We write them down and we burn them in the fire. And then we think of everything that we want to manifest for the year ahead. And then we write those down and then we burn them in the fire as well, but with the intent that that will come to fruition.
Amazing. I love that. I always want to do the same thing around the full moon.
Mm.
And when I manage to get my life to line up so that it happens, it's it's such a magic thing to
do. Full moon energy is lovely.
Yeah, definitely.
Could be really powerful.
When you're not working in the outdoors, do you still get out into the outdoors in your own time? What sort of things do you do?
So I'm a runner. I love really long runs in the fells, and the longer the better, really. So I like to be out for a good few hours.
What sort of distances?
It's not much so much about the distance, more about the time. So I like to be out for like 4 hours, 5 hours at a time. I did my first ultra race last year, and I just loved the training for that. Like after a couple of hours, I was totally in the zone, being. Do you know that that feeling of flow where everything's just going so well and you're just up in the fells and it's wonderful. So I do that. And then my husband and I cycle to her. So we cycle to around New Zealand, and we're introducing our children to it as well, actually. So they've been cycling with us ever since Robin was born. We cycled to around the Netherlands with a 4-month-old baby. And decided that, you know, we weren't going to let, when we had children, we decided that we didn't want to change the things that we did anyway. So yeah, we've just carried on, and we've just been on a little cycle tour around the Solway, actually. It was just for 2 days because it's quite quiet up there and it's flattish. So Rosie's 5 and Robin's 7, and they did 60 miles in 2 days, which was pretty good. And had a lovely time. So yeah, they're kind of used to it. We cycle them to school and back when the weather's nice and what have you. And I also I'm doing my forest schools practitioner training at the moment, because I run Nature Club at the kids' primary school. And I also have a Facebook page Instagram page as well, called Outdoor Mummy. I post things on there to kind of inspire people to get outside, connect with nature. So I put stuff on there about our activities, you know, walking up mountains, which we do quite a lot, and cycling, but also how to connect with nature, which is my real passion. So yeah, like yesterday we went to visit a friend who was rescuing some hedgehogs, and we got to meet this little hedgehog, which was just it's just delightful. So it's things like that you know, I just try and engage the kids with as much as possible.
That's amazing. And it's interesting, because one of my questions is definitely going to be like, how do you find the time to still get outdoors as a parent?
Yeah, very understanding husband. Although I have to say, so my husband's on the mountain rescue team, so he's called out quite a lot, and he does regular training, and also he's a search dog handler, and we've got 2 search dogs, so he spends a lot of time doing that. So I do get my time back to do a longer run, trying to do that on a Saturday morning. And I have to mindfulness is a really important part of my life, and to teach you have to have a regular practice yourself. And so what I do is I get up every morning at 6 o'clock. I do 15 minutes of yoga so my back doesn't seize up. And then if it's nice, I come outside and I go meditate up in the top garden. You see where there's a little Buddha statue. And so I do that for half an hour. So yeah, yoga for 15 minutes, meditate for half an hour before I start my day. And I really need that space. So yeah, I have no idea how I do it. And also because I'm having to do the, with the forest schools, training, you have to do a portfolio. It's a bit like doing an A-level, and I'm kind of working through that in the evenings at the moment now, frantically tapping away.
Very busy.
Yeah.
Amazing. And you talked a little bit about the fact that you've been cycle touring with the children.
Yes.
How was that? What did you learn doing that, and what advice would you give to parents?
Oh, okay, I think the advice I would give to start off with is just go and do it and practice, and just make sure you've got escape routes, I suppose. So we went last year and cycled around Kielder Forest, which little Rosie managed when she was 4, bless her, nearly most of the way. We did have a trailer back then in case she got a bit tired. So this year was the first time that we've done it without a trailer, without any other support. She was fine, actually. She's really come on. During lockdown, we did a lot of cycling. So we wouldn't normally be able to cycle the routes we did around here, but the traffic was so quiet, there wasn't any. So we've been cycling around Derwentwater quite a lot. And so they're used to doing, I don't know, like 20 miles plus in a day. So we weren't too worried about going out to the Solway because it was quite flat. And then, they were brilliant. Lots of snacks, I would say. Lots of snacks. So, yeah, lots of cereal bars, kind of, are you hungry guys? Do you need something to drink? Make sure you have lots of stops. And I think that was the thing. We didn't do 30 miles a day continuously. We sort of did, you know, went for a bit, stopped, looked at the view, had a snack, and then carried on. So yeah, and they love sleeping in a tent. I get a bit overexcited, actually. Never go to sleep very early. But that's part of the magic for them.
Amazing. And I guess what you were saying about the fact that you were cycling so much in lockdown anyway is to start small amounts and build up.
I think so, yeah, absolutely. And we've just I don't know, it's something, because we're really passionate about it, we've made sure that the children are on the bikes as soon as they can, and they're fairly road, you know, they're fairly roadwise as well. It's tricky sometimes to find spaces that don't have that many cars or just cycle trails, you know. But I would just say go and do it, really. And the more you normalize it, the more they're going to want to do it anyway. They just see it as part of our lives now, that, oh, we're going cycling, or, oh, we're going to cycle to school rather than drive. And that's the way we want it to be, really. Because again, we're not using fossil fuels. You know, we try and use the car, and we've got a camper van. We try and use it as little as possible.
I want to talk to you a little bit about sort of like your journey through life, and then I've got some questions that are actually more based around emotions.
Sure.
And then there's a few questions just to finish off at the end. So okay. Just to let you know, that's where we're going. There's kind of a bit of a pattern to it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you've always had like a clear path or a clear sense of direction through life?
No. So I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do when I was younger. I knew I liked the outdoors. I knew that it was important to me, but as a 16, 17 year old, I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. And my dad said, oh, you should go to university. So I started off doing a degree in English at the University of Kent. And while I was there, I joined the mountaineering club, which brought me up to the Lake District. And then when I was in Ambleside, I saw this leaflet about this outdoor studies degree course, and I was like, that is what I want to do. So I literally jacked in the University of Kent degree and moved straight up here. My mum and dad were horrified. I think probably in the space of about 3 weeks, I changed my mind and I'd moved up here already. So that was quite epic for them, really. So I knew I wanted to work in the outdoors then, and then it got to the point where I loved working in the outdoor industry. I loved being an outdoor instructor and hanging out with those kind of guys, and it was great, but I felt that I needed more. So then that's when I went down the more ecology side of things and more environmental route. And now I've got to the stage now where I've kind of in a different phase. It's like maybe there's been three phases. So this next phase is that this is much more about connecting people with nature, well-being, with perhaps a bit more emphasis on not specific habitats, but perhaps, which I was working on before, but perhaps a bigger picture approach to it all. So yeah, who knows what the next chapter is going to be.
Awesome. I think that's so worth saying, because I think it seems like from hearing from your story, I would have expected you to say yes and that you'd known all along, but
No, I really didn't.
Sometimes in my life, I feel a little bit like I might be going against the grain. Is that something you've ever felt?
Yeah, I suppose to some degree. Have I gone against the grain? I don't know. I've never really seen it like that. I've kind of just bounced through life doing what I felt like doing, really. I think also when you live around Keswick, like half the population lives in a van around here. And is an outdoor instructor of some description or what have you. So actually that's absolutely normal up here. But I don't think I have felt I've gone against the grain. I think possibly when I was doing the outdoor instructing side of things, and actually I managed a marina, like I said, down on Dirtwater. I did that for 3 years, which was a good job, you know. But I just felt like that life had more to offer. Like the outdoor industry was great, but actually it wasn't satisfying my need to do something good. And I think there's a theme running through there, is that I really want to do the best for people and for the planet as well. And I think the environmental side of me kind of shone through then and went, no, I need to, this is the direction I need to go in. And I think now the well-being side of things has shone through, and I'm going, okay, so now that's perhaps the next chapter, the next direction.
Awesome.
And actually, yeah, to be fair, I suppose going against the grain a little bit, I don't know, maybe I'm going with the flow. But this is very new. So forest bathing is new, and people's connection with nature is still something that people are grappling with or only just discovering. So I think that we're at the beginning of a journey there, you know, in terms of the nation. And I think that that's something you really need to foster.
Yeah, it's a really exciting time to be part of it as well, I guess. And how do you think your journey has shaped who you are now?
Oh, good question. Well, I believe that at whatever point you are in your life, that's where you're meant to be. So I think you need to go through experiences to develop your personality and your sense of who you are. And I think that being an outdoor instructor and doing those kind of living a kind of student-y life for quite a long time, a free life, was really good for me. I then felt like I went to do something a bit more responsible. I also joined the army, so my dad was a reservist, was in the TA his whole life, and well, obviously, from when he was 18 until he had to retire. And when he was when I was young, he was like, oh, you should join the army. You should join the army. And I was like, Dad, I'm not going to join the army. And he was like, oh, you should do a degree in agriculture, because that's what he did. And I was like, Dad, I'm not going to do a degree in agriculture. Just, you know, leave me be. And then ironically, I chose myself to do a degree in agriculture. And then I joined the army as well. So I actually think that being in the military has very much shaped who I am today, because it drastically it improved my confidence. Interestingly, it was partly that cemented my love of nature in a way, and perhaps drew me into the mindfulness conversation, because when you're on exercise and you're lying down in the grass, or you know, in a trench, and you're waiting for somebody to attack you, and you're on sentry duty, you have a lot of time where you're just watching, but you're in nature and you're with the environment. So I remember one day just lying in the grass and watching this beautiful grasshopper in front of me, and it didn't move because I was there. We were kind of just coexisting together, and it was a really special moment, actually. So I think, interestingly, that was a significant part of my journey to where I am now, which seems a little juxtaposed, doesn't it? But yeah, it was a good experience. And I left when I had children, so I didn't want to mobilise. I wasn't really able to do that, and I wasn't prepared to take that much time out away from my children. So and actually being a parent has shaped me very much. So it's made me realise that it's really important to look after yourself and your mental health. So I've been really lucky that I haven't had any mental health problems, but I think that's because I put a lot of preventative measures in place. And I think had I not got mindfulness or things like that, I think I'd be very stressed. I'm sure I would be, actually, but you know, things are absolutely great now. So, but being a parent brings with it responsibility around what's going to happen to my children in the future. And so I want to really instill my passion for nature and my will to do good things for the environment to my children, so they'll be able to have that as part of their lives and be able to take that forwards, you know, and hopefully do good things through their lives as well.
What's one thing that you know about yourself now that you wish you'd known sooner?
Oh, good question. I think with age, and I'm feeling, it's funny because I'm 41 and I still feel like I'm about 20. So it's a bit of a funny concept thinking about aging, but I always count my wrinkles in the morning. I'm like, oh, how many wrinkles do I have now? But I think with age comes a bit of wisdom about yourself, and I feel very much more connected with myself, and I feel that I'm good enough. And I think the years that have gone, I've had doubts about my ability, and I've had, you know, am I good enough to do this? Should I be doing this? And I think now I know that I can't be good at everything. That's one of those things. But I know that I'm a good person, and I know that I'll try my best. And that's, you know, in terms of looking after my family and doing the best for the environment. So the one thing that, was it the one thing I wish I'd known?
The one thing, yeah, that you know about yourself.
That I know about myself now. Yeah, that I am good enough.
Amazing. And it's really interesting that you started talking about the fact that as you get older, you seem to know yourself more, because that really relates to my next question. I've been asking everybody about authenticity and about their authentic selves.
Mm.
And it's something that for me, I just feel like my 20s has just been this journey of like trying to know myself and trying to know if I am myself and if I am acting as myself and who is myself anyway.
Sure.
And each year I get older, it's almost like I know myself a little, or you know, I've peeled back another layer.
Mm.
What do you think authenticity in your authentic self means?
I'm a little bit distracted by, I think, what is a sparrowhawk, I think, across the other side of the valley. Can you hear it? Squeak, squeak, squeak. I think being your authentic self means stripping back all the stuff that you get from society, all the conditioning, all the influences from outside, and just really looking inside at what's in your soul. And I suppose I can speak from a Reiki point of view, in that, you know, we are energetic beings, and we might have a body, but we have an energetic body as well. And within your body is that core, that soul. And I think if you can strip back all the all the stuff, in inverted commas, that builds up over our lives, and really go back to, okay, so what's important to me, and what, who am I? I suppose some of it's about who do I want to be, but also it's just checking in on yourself and how you truly feel. So I feel that that's my authentic self. It's almost like you shine your light. That's you, and you shine your light. So you come across to me, you know, I see you, I see your light, if that makes sense. I don't see, well, I do see Frankie in front of me and I see a physical body, but I'm connecting you with you energetically. So I think that's what it's about, being true to yourself.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I feel like that was actually like such a powerful answer. And it was really interesting to have your viewpoint on it. And from a Reiki point of view, that's not a viewpoint that we've had so far.
Sure, yeah.
So it's really interesting to get that across as well. And what do you think bravery is?
Oh, okay. So this is something, interestingly, I'm going to talk about courage. So courage is something that you explore quite a lot. So for example, I went to Sandhurst, and courage is something that you explore in terms of, what's courage? Is that physical courage? Is it moral courage? But I think that, and that kind of does link to bravery. So you can have physical bravery and you can have moral bravery. But I think you can also have vulnerability, and that's bravery as well. So I think bravery is often, I suppose bravery can be around being your true self. So to be authentic is to be brave in some cases, you know. Being brave is about putting yourself out there and being true to yourself, when sometimes you might get a bit of a bashing for it. And you kind of, you know, when you might put something on social media that other people don't agree with, and then you get, you know, get a bit slated, and you think, well, do you know what? That's your opinion. This is my opinion. So bravery can be, yeah, I suppose for me, bravery is about being your true self and putting yourself out there for what you believe in. Being a bit controversial about the environment. I was talking to a fantastic lady who came forest bathing on Saturday with me, who belongs to Extinction Rebellion, and she was so excited that because she got herself arrested, and I was like, oh, good for you, you know, because I felt that she was being brave. She was doing something she really believed in, and that was really inspiring.
And would you describe yourself as brave?
Yes and no. So I know from my past experiences in various different things in the army and in other jobs that I can be brave. And I have had to be brave and really push myself out of my comfort zone. And I feel like I'm kind of going into a bit of a brave new world at the moment with this forest bathing and well-being things, because it's a new journey for me. I'm venturing out there and I'm exploring and I'm testing things. And sometimes it doesn't always work out and I have to try again. So for me, that's been a bit brave. I also think that I would like to be braver in certain aspects of my life, which I haven't stepped out of my comfort zone yet. So for example, I would really like to be more of an environmental activist. I would really love to do that. But at the moment, I feel I'm restricted by my job. And also, you know, I probably can't really get arrested when I've got small children. But, you know, I have great ambitions for myself when I have less responsibility with childcare and more scope to go and get arrested, or, you know, to really stand up for something I believe in.
But I mean, there is obviously, like, not everybody can do that.
And, well, absolutely, like, yeah.
There is definitely a point in recognising that, you know, it's okay to be like, well, I've got these responsibilities now, and so that's not for me, but
yeah,
it is for the future.
I used to feel very frustrated that I couldn't change the world, and that I used to try and do stuff and just think, oh, this is kind of hopeless. But then I realised that I can only do so much. And if we have a collective effort of all the people, you know, lots of people just doing as much as they can, then that collective effort is massive. And I was able to kind of stop beating myself up about that and going, no, you're doing what you can right now. Other people are doing what they can right now, and collectively we'll be able to make a difference.
I really like the quote. I don't know where it's from, but it's that you can't change the world, but you can change the bit around you.
Exactly, yeah.
And I really like that.
Yeah.
And just because you can't change the world doesn't mean that you can't change the bit around you.
There's a lovely saying from mindfulness, which is it's a concept really more than a saying. It's about the ripple effect. So if you're practicing mindfulness, you're feeling calm, you're feeling well, the people that you connect with also benefit from that energy. And then the people that those people connect with. So you have this wonderful ripple effect. And I kind of think of it like that, you know, the work that I'm doing.
Yeah, definitely. And what do you think that happiness feels like?
Oh, I think I know what happiness feels like. Okay, so happiness feels to me like a big, wonderful space in my heart space, in my chest. And if it had a colour, it would be like sunshine yellow. And it makes me feel vibrant and alive and joyful. And it makes me feel really light, like a really light, expansive energy that I feel kind of radiates out, really radiates out. Yeah, I practice happiness. I don't know if that's the right thing to say. I'm very grateful for a lot that goes on in my life, and I'm able to, with that gratitude, I think feel happiness as well. Yeah.
Awesome, amazing.
And then what makes me happy? do you know what? Family makes me happy. My family is probably the number one thing. But then I need a combination of things to be happy. So I need to be outside to be happy, or to at least have access to outdoor space. I need to be able to connect with nature in some way. And it's nice doing that with the family as well. I love doing that, but also I need a bit of me time as well. And that's really important too. So yeah, family, being outside. Cycle touring makes me really happy. I love cycle touring, and running makes me really happy. So physical exercise as well.
Awesome. I've got two more questions for you.
Okay.
So the first one is, do you have any female role models or inspiring women?
Oh, good question. Okay, female role models. My grandmother, actually.
Oh, I love stories. Interestingly, of people's grandmothers.
So she was born in 1913, lived through obviously through the Second World War, and lived in the countryside. Latterly, she actually lived just south of London to start off with when she was a young girl. She's gone now. Just the most stoic person who just always tackled everything with this total calm. She's like, okay, that's what's happened. Let's deal with it. And she had a great knack for gardening. She loved the outdoors and nature as well. And I just always think I would aspire to be like her, put it that way. If I was like her, she went when she was 89 and she had all her marbles. If I could be somebody like her who was passionate about what she did and creative and really hardworking, then I would be really happy.
I absolutely love it when people say people in their network or in their friends, and it's kind of like you don't have to be an Olympic medalist to be a role model.
Yeah.
And like the reasons for being a role, like it's not about the winning, it's about people and their values and what they've brought to your life, and obviously the people that are closest to you are going to bring so much to your life, and I think there's something really beautiful in that.
So
my last question is, what's one piece of advice that you'd give to your younger self?
It actually, do you know what, somebody did ask me the other day, it was just one of those things I followed on Facebook, and somebody said, oh, what would you say to your younger self? And I was like, just be yourself. I think like many people, certainly in my late teens and early 20s, I struggled with my identity. And it's interesting how we can have multiple identities, and that's okay. So I've spent a long time struggling, but wondering who I am and realizing I am many. So for example, I was Natural England Jen, you know, ecologist Jen. I was also Army Jen, and those two were very different. And people who I was in the army with called me a tree hugger, and people who I worked with in the ecology field were like, "What is she doing in the army? That's, you know, that's a bit weird." And then I've been Mummy Jen, I've been Outdoor Instructor Jen, and I suppose there's many different versions of me that I am in different circumstances, but they all come together as a whole. So my advice to myself would be, just be okay with who you are, and just allow things to allow your life to flow. So don't try and strive for something to be perfect or for something to happen, but to perhaps let go of some of that expectation and enjoy the ride more than striving for a goal.
I love that. That's amazing. The whole way through that, I was like, yeah, I need that advice. Yeah, I need that advice. I'm just going to take notes for later.
Yeah, it's true though. And you don't have to be. Do you know, we have a lot of expectations of ourselves. And I think over the last few years, I've just been able to kind of let that go a bit. And actually, my life's become a lot easier because of letting go of those expectations. Yeah.
Is there anything you want to talk about that we've not talked about? Is there anything you want to plug that we've not covered? Or is...
I don't think so. Only that I suppose I might want to plug the Lakeland Wellbeing side of things, but that's about... about people finding their connection with nature, and I think that when it's the right time, people will find me, if that makes sense. So so yeah, if there's an opportunity for just directing people to, you know, to my website, then that'd be lovely. www.lakelandwellbeing.co.uk. And also the Outdoor Mummy stuff I do, because that's just, it's so, it's about trying to encourage other parents, grandparents, carers, aunties and uncles to, instead of sitting down and watching a DVD or something with the kids, to actually just get outside and grow some vegetables or go for a walk or notice something in nature. And yeah, and just to spend more time outside than inside on screens and things.
Thank you so much. That was so interesting.
You're very welcome. It's been really lovely to chat to you. Do you know what's really nice, actually, is some of your questions have prompted me to do a little bit of internal exploring, and that's really good for me as well. Absolutely. Yeah. Made me think.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Next week, I'm going to be chatting to Annette all about how she's gotten into wild swimming, about how she got into the outdoors throughout her life, hiking, mountaineering, and all sorts of other adventures. I absolutely can't wait to see you there. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone who you know will love it too. You can also join us over on socials. Find us at Extraordinary Ordinary You. We'd love it if you could give us a like and a follow. It really helps to grow the podcast. With so much thanks to our Patreon supporters, your support helps to cover the costs of the podcast and helps us to keep going and keep growing. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, keep on being extraordinary.